From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our connections with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Well, the president visited Salt Lake City Monday to announce his plans to reduce the proposed Bears Ears National Monument by some 85% and the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument by 50%.
Sharon Bacino is an attorney and land policy expert with the Natural Resources Defense Council. We'll talk with her about this announcement, what legal actions can and will be pursued to challenge it, and what this decision means to the fate of other national monuments across the country.
Then in the second half of the show, we'll shift gears and talk about our growing trash problem in Park City. It grows quite a bit, of course, during the ski season. And when you combine that with snow and vehicle-clogged roads, collecting it can be quite a chore.
Reese DeMille from Republic Services joins us to discuss wintertime trash and recycling activities and challenges, how you can help make this process a lot easier. He'll also provide us an update on China's green wall, so to speak, and their proposed actions to refuse imports of many types of plastic and other recyclables from the U.S.
All that and some news on record-breaking temperatures up in Barrow, Alaska, and a ratio of that town's record daily highs to record daily lows that is, well, infinity. We'll give you the numbers and do the math for you so you don't have to.
Remember, we don't take phone calls during the show, but you can join in on today's discussion by posting your comments and questions to our Facebook page, KPCW This Green Earth.
Our connections with and impacts upon the environment. That's what This Green Earth is all about. Stay with us.
This is Nanette Bush with Fairway Independent Mortgage, supporter and longtime listener of KPCW. Fairway Independent Mortgage offers personal home, vacation home, and investment property lending. Our mortgage team partners with local realtors to provide our clients with resources to understand the home finance process, located at 1700 Park Avenue or at nanettebush.com.
Hello, this is Diane Reinhart with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. We are a proud supporter of KPCW and have been providing our clients with real estate services since 1976. All current and active listings can be found on our website at bhhsutah.com, and our agents can help navigate the real estate market.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And joining us for the first half of the show today is Sharon Bacino. She's an attorney and a land policy expert with the NRDC, the Natural Resources Defense Council. And she's here to fill us in on the announcement that Trump made yesterday here in Utah. Sharon, thanks so much for joining us.
It's great to be with you.
Well, let's start with the nuts and bolts today. This announcement was made, and I think there's some confusion about what it actually said, what it actually did mean. So fill us in on what the announcement is exactly.
Sure. Many of your listeners may have seen clips of the president who came to Salt Lake. He spoke there at the state capitol, and at that time he signed two different proclamations, which had the result of replacing and superseding the designations, the proclamations that President Obama had put in place that had created President Obama created the Bears Ears National Monument in southern Utah, and the second proclamation addressed the monument that President Clinton had created several years back, Grand Staircase Escalante.
So if I understand just the numbers, Bears Ears would be reduced from 1.35 million acres to 200,000 acres. That's roughly, I like to do it in square miles. That's roughly 2,000 square miles down to 30 square miles. And, or I'm sorry, 300 square miles, 2,000 down to 300 square miles. And the Grand Staircase Escalante would go from roughly 2 million acres to about 1 million acres in size.
That's right. I mean, what we had happen yesterday was that President Trump really wiped the map clean of what had been done before, and he wiped the map clean of the protections that were in place, and he replaced them with really, you know, tokens of what was there before. I should mention that, yes, the size, the reduced size is significant, and it's a fraction of what was there before. That's especially true for Bears Ears. But equally important is what the president did related to the uses that are allowed in the lands, the limited lands that he's left protected as national monuments.
So expand on that a little bit.
Sure. Well, when let's take the Bears Ears example. When President Obama designated that as a national monument at the end of 2016, there was language in the proclamation that spoke to the significant values that were there in the lands, whether they were cultural, archaeological, ecological, and along with that record of the values that existed and the need to protect them, there were certain management prescriptions, prohibitions on certain uses. There are plenty of uses that are still allowed, but the restrictions were on activities that that harmed and scarred and took away the value of these lands really forever. And they were things like oil and gas leasing or mining for uranium. What we've seen in these new proclamations, and we were at the very end of yesterday able to track down the actual text of the proclamations, and it's really the last page or so where he delineates what he's going to allow in his new monuments, and it includes extensive motorized use. One thing that's very troublesome is whether you're going to have people going out there and blading roads and creating roads where there aren't roads now. Grazing is another issue that is explicitly addressed and allowed to continue.
And does the same changes go into the Grand Staircase Escalante? Is its uses also being impacted?
Yes. I mean, there's something, the language, they're two different proclamations, but the language is quite similar in terms of the changes. What it means to be a monument
right
now is much less than it did before. Specifically on grazing, I mean, I should mention that it wasn't that the monument designation took away existing rights to graze, that those were honored. But
right,
what we have happening in the new monuments is that they are able to go beyond what they were already doing. They're able to, there's this term called vegetation treatment, but it actually, I mean, I have seen some of the videos of the work that's done to treat the vegetation, and it's essentially clear cutting across the desert landscape of the juniper and all the vegetation that is there. It's incredibly destructive.
So as I just want to make a note, as we say sort of like these new monuments, we're talking about, so Bears Ears, I think, was sort of, it was reduced but split into two renamed monuments, and then Grand Staircase was split into three new monuments.
Yeah, it's
and
the
so
two
it's,
ears.
So
it's literally not much more than the two ears, and maybe that's the two parcels.
So that's why we have these, you know, what we're saying, five new monuments in place of the two much larger,
right,
more expansive existing monuments. And I just want to make
right,
a
note of that. Right, and I think one key difference is that what we had before was the protection of a landscape, and that And it's a landscape that many people treasure for a lot of different reasons. And so it was more than about protecting a particular feature like the Bear's Ears or protecting specific ruins or petroglyphs. What we had previously was the protection of a landscape and the integrity that comes with that, and that is destroyed in breaking it up into these different fragments.
Now, let's talk about what happens to the land that is no longer included in the national monuments. What is the future of this land look like as it reverts to, you know, BLM land?
Well, unfortunately, there are a lot of things that can happen pretty quickly that weren't happening before. One of those is that you can move forward to, the BLM can move forward with leasing for oil and gas, also for coal. So that's one of the significant facts related to Grand Staircase. One of the reasons that that was set aside was to protect and prevent from digging up in an area where there hasn't been large-scale coal mining, a huge new resource and reserve that's there. And that's bad both for the landscape that's there, but also for the direction that this country is going in terms of its energy future. And we know that we just simply cannot afford to dig up new fossil fuel reserves to go in areas where we haven't been drilling or mining before, that our country needs to go in a different direction. And we started to go in that direction, and Utah's been part of that in
right.
terms of wind, solar, and so this is taking us in the wrong direction.
And I think we tend to overlook the archaeological importance, the cultural importance of this land, and the fact that there are tens of thousands of different sites, locations that have architectural and cultural importance that need to be protected from looting, which goes on, you know, as far as I've read or understand, you know, it goes on currently, you know, every day. These areas are at risk of being looted or are being looted. And that's part of the critical protection that's now being lost, or the opportunity to provide that protection is being lost.
Yes, I should let the tribes, I think they're the best spokespeople to speak to this. And in fact, you've seen several tribal nations vigorously opposing what the president has done, and they have now this morning, or maybe it was late last night, filed suit challenging the action specifically on Bear's Ears. I will just point to some of the language in the proclamation was offensive, and I think just wrong in that it suggested that because there are artifacts in other places that you don't need to protect this whole landscape, that it's enough that we still have one site or a few sites.
Wow.
And that really I think minimizes and trivializes the value of the entire landscape and the culture and the sacred that is that was preserved originally through the tribe's proposal that President Obama acted on.
It's like saying we got a kiva over here at Mesa Verde and a granary here in Chaco culture. So why do we, you know, we're good.
That's
astounding. Sorry.
The other thing I wanted to address is the question about access. And I'm all for access, but it's access for all, and it's not about monopolizing for a few and destruction by a few, and that unfortunately is the direction that Trump has moved.
Mm-hmm. So if you're just joining us, we are speaking with Sharon Bacino. She is an attorney and a land policy expert with the NRDC, the Natural Resources Defense Council. Sharon, one thing that I just wanted to clarify as we talk about the future of the land that's been removed from these monuments is the fear that the land is being given back to the state. Now, this is not the case, if I understand it correctly. Is that right? Despite lots of
talk.
That's
correct. And I am an attorney, so I can speak to that. But I'd also like to just mention that I've been a longtime member of the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, and I do serve on its board now. And they and many others were out in the streets in Salt Lake. I think there were many more on the streets than there were in the Capitol.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it delivers a very important message, which is that the president needs to listen to the 99%, the vast majority of people across party lines that support protecting these lands. But let me address your question, which goes to really, is this really a land grab by the federal government? And absolutely not. All of this land was federal land, has been, and it's about how that land is managed. There was no grab of private or state land. This was all managed, it was all owned by all of us as taxpayers, and the monument did not put land into federal ownership that was not there before.
And then, therefore, it will revert to federal ownership now that it's being removed from a monument.
That's correct. What is critically important is, though, what uses are allowed on that federal land. And even under the monument designation as they were originally put in place, there were plenty of uses that were allowed, but they were allowed in a way that was consistent with the priorities and the direction of protection and preservation that was spelled out in for Bears Ears, the proclamation that President Obama had signed and issued.
I've got a question about the proclamation itself, the legal or administrative aspects of that. Does that undergo any type of administrative review, public comment period, or is that a done deal?
So the proclamation, the act by the president, is a done deal. President Trump has signed two proclamations that supersede what was done previously. There was this review that Interior Secretary Zinke had initiated over the summer to take some public comment. It paled in comparison to the public comment that the Obama administration and Secretary Jewell had engaged in, including going to Bluff and being on the land and talking to the people there before designation. But what happens now is that the issues that will play out in court are, one, whether President Trump had the authority to take the action that he did. The Antiquities Act is pretty clear in that it provides the president the authority to create but not destroy. And also the issue of to what extent citizens and citizen groups can challenge in court the action of the president versus an agency like the Department of the Interior. Those are a couple of the key legal issues that now will need to be resolved by the courts.
And has NRDC and other environmental groups already brought this to the courts? I imagine you were anticipating what happened yesterday.
Yes. So there was a lawsuit filed by NRDC and other groups at the end of yesterday related to Grand Staircase. My understanding is that the tribes, and I did, in fact, see the complaint this morning, that the tribes have filed suit over bear's ears, and we do also intend to litigate some of the environmental issues related to monuments in general, because these are issues, they're fundamental issues about how we manage the lands that belong to all of us, whether the Antiquities Act is used as it was intended for protection rather than destruction, and whether the public lands exist for all of us to enjoy or just for the profit of a few.
Now, I've read that two other presidents did reduce the size of a couple national monuments. President Wilson reduced the size of Mount Olympus, and Roosevelt, FDR, reduced the size of the Grand Canyon. Is that true? And B, what's interesting that both of those eventually became national parks anyway. But there is, I guess, a precedent that has been set to reduce the size of national monuments. Is that correct?
So there are a couple there are some examples of limited modifications mm-hmm. in size. The right to do that has not explicitly been addressed by the courts. What I would draw the distinction here in that. Both in terms of the significant reductions in size involved here and also the significant changes of use that this modification in name is essentially a revocation and erasing what had been in place previously.
Okay.
I see.
Just one or two more questions. Can a future president, let's say, who can come in and on January 21st or so, restore the size of these in another proclamation? Do we set up a situation where that these presidents, future presidents, just come in and just make wholesale changes to national monuments like this?
Well, I think that is why it will be so important to see how the courts handle this. Mm-hmm. I think that what we're seeing here is really twisting and a perversion of what the Antiquities Act was intended to do, I think that, you know, hopefully we will see limits drawn on that. The need to protect and at times protect from imminent threats is a very real one, and it's important for the president to have that power of protection. But it's also important to have continuity. I mean, you look at Grand Staircase, Escalante. I mean, that has become a piece of the vibrant economy of
right.
Southern Utah. It's something that the state actually trumpets for economic development and tourism. And so the uncertainty that now has been created is very problematic, not just for those who care about these lands across the country, but for the people living there and have businesses there.
Mm-hmm. Sure, and the people probably attempting to manage those lands and
exactly
and, make
right.
decisions about on-the-ground management. So let's just take a minute to talk about what we see happening next. What are the next steps over the next, say, you know, couple of months that we can expect to see play out?
Sure. Well, what I'd like to see, and I had hoped that this would have been what this administration had done from day one, is that the time and resources are put into managing these lands to protect them and to act as the stewards that even Secretary Zinke says he wants to be. Unfortunately, the reality that we've seen is that time and money, our taxpayer money, went into reviewing whether monuments should exist at all. I should mention that Secretary Zinke is expected to announce later today further. He's called a press conference at 1 to possibly announce further changes to additional monuments. So we really, unfortunately, have been spending time and resources on questioning whether they should exist rather than managing them to protect them. There are management plans that need to be done that will presumably now move forward for these smaller parcels, and we'll see the litigation playing out in court, which will take a while.
And so do the changes on the ground into these smaller monuments take place immediately, or do those have to wait until this is reviewed in the courts?
Well, some will, and that's why groups like the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance and others who are out on the ground monitoring what's happening, there will be some people that I think feel emboldened to use the landscape in ways that are destructive rather than productive. There are legal changes that flow from the lifting of the monument designation for some of the lands. So, for example, you will see some proposed lease sales. Those lease sales involve a public process, but certain types of activity, activity like uranium mining, can be done. Certain surface disturbing activities can occur without notice and public process. And so there's a real threat of imminent and irrevocable harm.
Sharon Bacino, she is an attorney with the Natural Resources Defense Council. She's also a board member of Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. We thank you for your service on both those organizations, and also thank you for taking the time to chat with us about this critically unprecedented announcements and the changes that are forthcoming. There's more to come, and I think we'll be reaching out, get back in touch with you to talk more about these issues in the coming months. So thanks.
Okay, very good. Enjoy the conversation.
Yeah, thank you again, Sharon. We'll be in touch. Hey, let's take a break for a couple of underwriters, and we'll be back with Reese DeMille from Republic Services. It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.
G'day, this is Ashley from Campus Coffee, happy to sponsor programming on KPCW. We can't wait to serve the Park City locals this winter. We're excited by our breakfast and lunch menu to complement our espresso drinks. Campus Coffee is open daily at the base of Park City Mountain Resort, up the stairs from the ice rink next to the Adirondack chairs. CampusCoffee.com.
Dr. Bob Miller here from Miller Orthodontics, proud supporter of The Local View with Randy Barton, who makes us all smile. Embrace is a technology to straighten teeth without anything showing. More information about Embrace is at myembrace.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues. Our relationship with and impacts upon the environment. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And joining us in the studio for the second part of the show is Reese DeMille. He is with Republic Services, General Manager, Northern Utah. You have quite a lengthy title that I can never
recall. Not General Manager, but I am over the contract and the government affairs
for
all of Utah. Yeah.
For all of Utah.
Yeah.
Including our national monuments. I'm sorry. I just had to say, whatever they look like as of this hour. So, hey, you're here to talk about what Republic Services does and does best: solid waste management, solid waste and recycling programs. And I also, at some point, I want to talk a little bit about food waste. That's a big topic that's going around. A lot of discussions about. I want to get your thoughts on that. But we're going to talk about China. We'll drop in a little bit about what's going on there. The last few times you've talked about their their programs and changing policies and attitudes towards accepting recycled goods, most notably here from the U.S., how that's changing and what the potential consequences or impacts that might have on the recycling market here in the U.S. So we got a lot to cover. First, what do you want to talk about? I'll give you a couple of minutes. What's the big issue on your
mind? The big issue for us right now, especially in Summit County, is just the fact that the snow is falling, and it's good to see it here in the mountains. It was a great drive up. Yeah. And how that's going to impact our service here in Summit County. So just kind of a little bit recycling as well, but also with trash service, is just to encourage everyone to make sure that, you know, there's a little bit of patience involved with the snow that we're going to have and how that might affect the collection service.
Because you can't get to every can and every dumpster sometimes because of snow conditions.
That's correct. That's correct. You know, the HOAs have been great working with them and working with the county. And, you know, for the most part, everybody's very willing to be patient with that. But we can't be everywhere at the same time. And
you also have to work with Mr. Plow, who's
absolutely
running around his truck and sometimes forgets where he's putting his snow, is plowing his snow.
As long as the residents pull their cans back when the snow plows go through and then place their cans in front of the snow bank that the plow makes, you know, we're in pretty good shape. It's when the can is left there, the plow buries the can, it's frozen in the snow, and then our guy tries to come and get it. We've actually pulled half the can out and left the bottom half of the can in the snow bank because it's frozen in there. So.
And or sometimes it can damage your equipment, too.
Oh, sure.
Sure, right.
And a resident may, you know, leave for the weekend, and they come back, and their can is buried in the snow, so they got to work with their neighbors and figure that out.
Okay. So a community effort here. It's a team effort.
It's team effort.
Sometimes. And so as a result, like I said, you can't get to every can or every dumpster, and maybe you're delayed or you're backed up, and then what? You get calls from your customers saying, why isn't my can being picked up? My trash cans, you guys missed my can, you're going to come back. That's the season.
Yeah, it happens. You know, it does happen. You know, we try to get to all of our routes during the winter, just like we do in the summer. Sometimes we're delayed. Sometimes a road hasn't been plowed that we usually go down in the morning, so we've got to come back and come in the afternoon. And then the resident says, oh, they missed me because they weren't here at 7 or 8 like they usually are in the morning. And so we're communicating that with the county, with Chriselle at the county, and she's getting that information out through social media to let the residents know what delays are in the county at that time.
So I was just about to ask, what is, you know, if people have questions or they're wondering if their can has been missed, what is the best resource? Who should they contact?
Well, they can contact us, but they can also contact or go to the social media platforms that the county has.
And so that's the Summit County Facebook page?
Correct.
Okay.
And Chriselle will be putting that information out there.
Okay.
And she can only put out what we tell her. So it's incumbent upon us to communicate with her.
Sure.
And then she puts that out there.
Sense of how your volume of management goes up during the holiday season?
Well, we don't have the yard waste issue, so that's not – so it goes down for yard waste. But it does go up, obviously, during the holidays for Christmas time and with Sundance. You know, with traffic and other, you know, volumes that are related to the Sundance issue.
And your recyclables go up, too.
Recycle volumes go up, absolutely. And I would like to talk a little bit about what we can do from the holiday recycling material.
Good.
You know, wrapping paper, for instance. Wrapping paper, if it's paper and doesn't have a film on it of some sort, is recyclable. But if it's got a shiny film to it, then it is not recyclable. And that needs to go... That needs to go in the garbage.
And so that would be anything with like a metallic coating?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Metallic coating, yep.
All right. So don't put that in your recycle bin. And in fact, Recycle Utah doesn't accept those either. There's just no mark. It's not recyclable.
Correct.
It's shiny.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. So that's wrapping paper. How about bows and ribbons? Same thing?
Same thing. Yep.
All right.
So, you know, the best thing to do with Christmas material, and I was thinking about this on my drive up, is what do I do to reuse that material? That's really what we need to do. And, you know, some people might think
repurpose
that's cheap.
It. Right.
But in our house, if it's, you know, wrapping paper isn't cheap anyway. But in our house, if it's nice wrapping paper, we take it off the box and maybe put it there, and we can wrap a smaller box with it another time in a different year.
Okay.
Boxes as well. Shoe boxes, other gift boxes. those can be broken down, or those can be put up in a shelf somewhere and used for a different event or for next year's Christmas as well, instead of just continually putting those into recycling or garbage. So reusing that is very important.
I like that. I like that thought. And I know in some cultures that is common to just have the reusable gift bags and packaging and things. We don't do that so much, but I certainly like
We're
that concept.
Disposable society.
And we are.
In that sense.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah.
Getting better,
yeah.
But we still have a very... a mindset that's it's just disposable.
There's room for improvement.
Okay,
that's right.
And
it's
you're
a good
seeing
way to put it, Reese.
Now, what's going on? Anything else you want to deal with holiday recyclables before I turn to
what?
China?
Just gifts themselves. So I was in the running store recently, and I noticed that they had a box there for used running shoes. So you know, you get a brand new pair of running shoes for Christmas. Instead of throwing your old ones away,
yep.
Take them back to the running store.
Perfect.
And drop them in the box. And, you know, they probably will go to a needy recipient.
Exactly.
Or be recycled in some
Great way. Idea. And again, Recycle Utah accepts old running shoes and sneakers and stuff. Please, God, don't throw it into the shoe tree. The shoe tree is full.
Oh, stop. You're such a Scrooge,
the
Chris.
The shoe trees
let's leave it
are
alone.
Full. It's a grove. All right, you hear me now. I'm all for a shoe tree, not a shoe grove. Stop throwing your shoes up in that stupid
tree. No fun in Chris's
And take
world.
Them down and bring them to Recycle Utah or any other locations. Like you said, the
yeah,
running stores.
I don't know if all running stores do it, but I know that there
a lot
are certain
of them
ones
too.
That do.
All yeah. right, thank you. I had to get that in there because I drive by that thing, those trees.
Well, I think it's a great Park City tradition.
Oh,
and we'll talk about this.
And it needs
time.
To end.
The debate is on.
It needs to wrap up. All
hey,
right.
What about bags, though? Can it just? There's a lot of bags
what do you
at
got
Christmas
about bags?
Time. Let's talk about bags real
right.
quick. Bags should not go in. Loose bags should not go into your recycling.
Are we talking about plastic bags, paper bags?
Sorry.
Plastic bags.
Yes. Plastic right. bags should not go
into
the recycle bin.
Recycle
Correct.
Bin.
They should be recycled. The best way to do that is take them right back to the grocery store. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a bag ban.
On some of the stores.
On some of the stores.
Right.
But for the most part, people are still going to have bags. And those loose bags, they should just go right back to the store and be recycled that way.
I think, again, Recycle Utah also accepts plastic bags, too.
Yep.
They'll take them from you,
yep.
and they'll recycle
Absolutely.
Them. You know what I do? Once I get a plastic bag from Smith, I reuse it. How about that? It's a plastic bag. I reuse it, so I bring it back with me.
Shocking.
Very
yeah,
easy.
Exactly. You can reuse those things. All right. So let's turn our attention, if you may, to China. What is going on? We've talked about the green sword, the green wall.
Green fence and then
the green
sword.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
Get it right. And they've got new changes coming up in 2018.
Yes. What I would like to say about that is we don't know what those are going to be yet.
Okay.
And so, instead of speculating on what all those are going to be, because they keep changing, right now for Utah, I can talk about what locally, there's nothing that's changing for us yet locally. Whatever we could take 2, 3, 4 months ago, we can take now in our all-in-one or single-stream recycling bins. China may change that in the future, but we don't know what that is going to be yet. Now, there are certain parts of the country that may be experiencing those changes right now, but what we don't want to do is panic. As at least in Utah here, because locally we're still able to take what we have been able to take. And when that changes, those announcements will be made.
And I guess the background or the context on this is that historically so much of the recyclable waste from the U.S. has been shipped to China because it's cheaper to process, cheaper labor. Who knows what that looks like?
Yeah.
There are all kinds of problems with that, but that's what's changing is China is essentially starting to limit what they'll accept.
Yeah,
so
well,
we had you mentioned the green fence and the green sword.
Yeah,
right. And the manufacturing is done in China, so that they use those materials there to remanufacture or to manufacture products, and so they are limiting the amount of recycling that's coming into their country, and it mainly started because of contamination.
Yeah,
and they said, we're taking America or other countries, UK's materials. And there's so much contamination to it. Why are we taking their garbage?
Yeah.
And we have to landfill it in our own country. And so they were limiting greatly the amount that they're taking because they don't want our garbage.
So they'll want more and more uncontaminated plastics. But there's a possibility, like you say, I'll put words in your mouth, but because like you say, we don't know for sure. But they may say, we're not taking any more plastics importing. We've got enough plastics ourselves with a growing economy, growing wealth and consumption. We've got enough plastics inside this country to manage first that we don't need to import plastics anymore. So that's their changing.
Yeah,
there
may be
position.
A time when they say we've got enough. Yeah. Or we're getting it from wherever
to deal with your own.
So what we're doing as a company, I'll just tell you what Republic is doing, is we're looking for alternatives, constantly looking for alternative places to take the recycling, whether it be here domestically or in other foreign markets. And we've been, very successful so far of getting our recycling products to these other markets as well.
All right. Hey, I'm speaking with Reese DeMille. He's with Republic Services, Government Affairs, officer or so with the entire state of Utah, among other things. He's here talking about solid waste practices, holiday solid waste handling, recyclables. One last thing with respect to what you guys accept in your recyclable cans. Do you take styrofoam?
No.
Okay. So
styrofoam should not go in.
But styrofoam can go to Recycle Utah.
Yes.
I'm always trying to make sure that we mix and match. You understand that you guys take a lot of recyclables. Some things you don't take. Styrofoam is one of them, but you can take that to Recycle Utah. They have a densifier, and they will manage it there. They're getting overwhelmed with styrofoam, by the way, with this increasing mail-based shipping, online shopping, lots of cardboard, and lots of styrofoam they're seeing there. I don't know if you guys are seeing similar trends.
Well, we're trying to communicate out and educate people that we don't take that in a single stream, all-in-one curbside recycle bin, and Recycle Utah is a wonderful resource or a wonderful location alternative to what we can do at the curb. But you're right, it's coming in the packaging, and it can't go into that curbside.
Interesting. Okay. Do you have stickers that you put on your can for that?
Well, our cans...
Do I need to go around
our
with
new
a
cans,
stencil? And...
We do have some stickers that we're putting on older cans, but our new cans have a stencil that come with them.
Good.
But the problem is you put a stencil on there and then the markets change. So we're stuck with, a stencil on there and then something changes because you used to be able to take styrofoam. You used to be able to take plastic bags. And so now you can't. And it's really a sorting issue at the materials recovery facility.
Right.
It's what the MRF tells us what we can take and what we can't.
Wow. Okay. Can we turn to food waste for a few minutes?
Sure.
Some communities are kind of looking into opportunities to take food waste out of the solid waste stream, segregate it, let's say, and either compost it or digest it and turn it into byproducts of methane gas and use that as energy. Wasatch Recovery, I think, is the company down in Salt Lake City that's attempting to do that. Is there opportunities for communities first of all, does Republic Services get involved with food waste processing and
throughout
compost?
The country, we do.
Okay.
Throughout the country. And it is all based on what the community wants.
Okay.
We're a collection company. But we also, from an environmental standpoint, we are going to do what we can from an environmental standpoint as well.
So if Park City or Summit County said, hey, we're interested in at least the feasibility of looking into food waste, segregating out our food waste, commercial food waste or residential food waste, Republic Services would offer some insights, some analysis to see if it's feasible, economically feasible, environmentally feasible, engineering feasible.
Absolutely. I mean, one of our brand pillars as a company is environmental responsibility. And so we will work with the county to do whatever we can to help them. It's just based on what the county wants to do. There's a cost associated with it.
Sure.
And then what do you do when you put it on the ground? How is it going to be composted?
Right.
Where is it going to be composted? Smell issue. There's a bird issue. There's all these different types of issues. And so it just, there's a trade-off.
But it can work.
Absolutely.
It can work depending on the community, mm-hmm. the volumes that are generated, the land that's required, the engineering that goes into it. I think the city of Boise has a food waste program where I'm looking into. So it's open. It's in play. It's an idea that could possibly work.
Absolutely.
All right.
And it's done all throughout the country. It really is. And then there are some that haven't done it, and they try it, and they like it. And then there's others that have tried it, and they say, this really doesn't work for us in the end. And so they stopped it, but it's absolutely an option.
All right. Last, I got one more. question, unless you have any other.
Go for it.
What was that question? Food waste, China. Oh, geez. I think it was, I'm drawing a blank. I think we wanted to talk about, oh, we talked about styrofoam. You also don't take glass in the bins.
That's correct.
That's right. So again, take your glass to Recycle Utah.
Yes.
So there's a lot of things that Recycle Utah can handle and manage right now that perhaps you can't take in your recycling bins for market reasons or otherwise. Or can't. Okay. So that's you have to go on the Recycle Utah's website and see what they offer. Look at your website, see what you guys can handle. You know, it's kind of a, yeah, it takes a little involvement and a little time to figure out.
Well, the two companies are a little bit, you know, it's kind of two different animals. They're a location where you drop the materials off and it can be separated right there, where we're doing all-in-one recycling where it's got to go to a separation center. And then, so that makes glass a product that they can't separate through that conveyor belt system.
Oh, at the MRF. Interesting.
And I think it's worth mentioning, too, every time we talk about recycling with Republic Services, that when we talk about the plastic bags, that also goes for the bags that your recyclables are going into. So don't bag your recycling and put it in the bin. Remember to empty it out of the bag before you put that in the bin. Otherwise, it may not be recycled.
Well said.
So
yeah.
Exactly. I always like to emphasize that because I think...
That's what
I'm not sure we
about.
All know that yet. Ah, yeah,
thanks.
Sure. Yeah, you can claim that, Chris.
Good point.
Hey, Reese DeMille, thanks so much for stopping by, giving us up that update. Always appreciate the time. And, of course, thank you for your sponsorship of the show. We really appreciate Republic Services' efforts.
Great to be here.
For years now.
For years.
Yeah.
And thank you for the gift. She's dropped off. So that, let's take a break. A couple underwriters.
Absolutely.
We're actually getting a call. Somebody wants to maybe share their experiences with recycling. Take calls.
That's right.
You can send us your comments to
send
our Facebook
emails.
To Facebook page or email us. But we're not taking calls right now. We're taking a break, as a matter of fact. When we come back, we got a news item or two to hit. It's This Green Earth. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Reese DeMille with Republic Services, your local recycling and garbage pickup provider and a proud sponsor of KPCW's This Green Earth. Garbage and recycling containers should be placed at the curb before 7 a.m. on your scheduled collection day. Keep Summit County green. SummitCounty.org/recycle.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.com, Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, FredMarshallPainting.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. What? Did you want to say something? Say it on air now. Something about the shoe tree? I know you've come around.
The eye finally... roll didn't get the message across, Chris.
All right, we got a few minutes for at least one news item. This is out of Barrow, Alaska. You know, in our ongoing attempt to explain that the planet is warming. And here's the obvious facts. Let's turn to Barrow, Alaska.
This is the weekly reminder that climate change is real.
Yes. This is our segment. Climate change is real. Get over it. This is out of Barrow. Barrow, I believe, is the farthest northern incorporated town in America, right up along the Arctic Ocean. Okay. Now, in November 2007, last month, the average temperature in Barrow was 17.2 degrees Fahrenheit. That's a new monthly record besting its previous record of 15.3. That's a big,
that's
exactly.
Enormous.
That's a big, enormous. Yeah. Because usually when you see records broken, it's by a few tenths or
yep.
so. Like, this is 1.9 degrees warmer than its previous record, which was in November 1950. And here's the more amazing thing. Some 16.4 degrees above average. So the average November temperature in Barrow is around 01 degree Fahrenheit. It averaged 17 degrees this month. Okay, big number. Now, winters in Barrow have seen a dramatic warming over the past 10 years. In fact, 8 of the warmest years on record for Barrow have occurred in just the past 10 years. That's another significant trend. All right. Then here's the most fascinating thing. During the time frame of December 2015 to November 2017, a total of 25 daily record highs have been set versus 0 daily record lows. Now, what do you typically expect now, you know, in a climate that's under equilibrium? Same amount of record highs to record lows. It's called equilibrium. Yeah, it's really warm, but then it gets really cold and everything's average out. So you should see the same number of daily record highs versus and daily record lows, around 1-to-1 ratio. Now, the number of daily record highs set over roughly a 2-year period has been 71. How many daily record lows have been set in Barrow during the same 2-year period?
Is a negative number possible?
Yeah, that's a good one. Well, close, 0. 0 daily record lows, 71 daily record highs. That's a ratio of 71 to 0, which is why in our intro we said if you divide anything by 0, you get roughly infinity, I believe. That's an insane ratio, 71 to 0 daily record. Barrow is warming, folks.
That's terrifying.
That is terrifying. Okay. That's it. That's our news item. thanks for joining us. And let's take... Oh, no. We can't take... We've taken all our breaks. So let's begin to wrap up. Thanks to our guests today.
First, Sharon Bacino, the attorney and land policy expert with the NRDC, the Natural Resources Defense Council. And she was here to fill us in on Trump's announcement yesterday to change and modify and reduce the Bears Ears National Monument by 85% and the Grand Staircase National Monument by 50%.
It's literally the two ears.
And
I'm telling you, 300 square miles
and we'll
from
see,
2,000 square miles.
We'll see what comes next.
What comes next of all the cases, the legal cases that are being already been filed, the public expression, let's say, associated with this.
We know, you know, we've covered this in past shows that the public opinion is strongly, strongly in favor of keeping these monuments the way they were. So, it, you know, remains to be seen how much people will follow through on this.
All right. And then thanks to Reese DeMille with Republic Services, as always, giving us an update on what's going on with your solid waste management, your pickups and your recycling. What do's and don'ts, et cetera.
That's right. As always, we want to thank our sponsors who make this show possible. They include Recycle Utah,
Republic Services,
Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance,
yes, Vail Epic Promise,
Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties,
San Francisco Design,
Park City Mountain,
and of course, very importantly, listeners like you.
As always, you can email us your thoughts, your comments, your ideas for future shows and guests at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
Remember, this is KPCW 91.7 FM in Park City.
Remember, we've got your Wasatch back.
We'll see you again next week. Thanks for joining us. And pray for snow.
That's right.
And you're at NPR News is coming up next.